Don't you see the danger, John, inherent in what you're doing here? Genetic power is the most awesome force the planet's ever seen, but you wield it like a kid that's found his dad's gun.
It's hardly appropriate to start hurling generalizations.
If I may, I'll tell you the problem with the scientific power that you're using here. It didn't require any discipline to attain it. You know, you read what others had done, and you took the next step. You didn't earn the knowledge for yourselves, so you don't take any responsibility for it. You stood on the shoulders of geniuses to accomplish something as fast as you could, and before you even knew what you had, you patented it and packaged it and slapped it on a plastic lunchbox, and now you're selling it. You want to sell it. Well,
I don't think you're giving us our due credit. Our scientists have done things which nobody's ever done before.
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could that they didn't stop to think if they should.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 93. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, welcome back, my friend.
It's good to be home, man.
Yeah, man. So you were traveling all over the world. We actually had an opportunity last week. I don't know if you noticed, but we had an opportunity to play my favorite game.
Where in the world? Where in the world?
John Nicholson.
Yeah, anyway, so we didn't give away any prizes. We just let everybody know that you were spreading the gospel of vSAN. So, successful trip.
It was good. It was great. We did some great training, and I also got some great sushi.
Nice. Very cool. Well, while you were gone, I had the opportunity to moderate a panel for a vForum. It was the one that you had pre-recorded on what's new in vSAN 6.7 Update 1. So it was fun. I was actually watching you present this session, but you were actually over in Hong Kong. And some of the questions were coming in through the chat as I was moderating, and they were like podcast related. People were like, is John profoundly dumbfounded?
Profoundly dumbfounded. Oh, the inside jokes.
Yeah.
For the podcast. They follow you everywhere.
I love it, man. It was great. You know, Lund sucked just pounding through the questions. It was fun.
Well, one great thing about going, you know, anytime you go over to Asia or APJ is you can sometimes get some different perspectives. You know, some things obviously, you know, in infrastructure ring true, but there's definitely some different opinions and perspectives and definitely some sharper ones. And so I think this week we're gonna dig into the vault, an interview I did, and dig a little deeper on you know, what some perspectives come from the other side of the world.
Absolutely. That's kind of one of the cool things about this job that we have, where we do get to travel places and present and do training and all that. But we also get to run into a lot of really interesting people. And John, a few weeks ago, you got the opportunity to run into someone I think most people in the IT industry have at least read one or two articles from, this gentleman, Simon Sherwood, who used to work at The Register. And so you had a great opportunity to sit down and just talk IT industry with him. So I was excited. And that one has been sitting in our vault for a couple of months. So how did you find him and what made you reach out to Simon?
Well, Simon's actually been involved in the vExpert program. So I initially talked to him on there, but one of the fun things, I was down in Sydney, and actually The Register at the time, where he was, Situation Publishing, their office is just down the street from our office. So I was like, okay, I got to meet this guy for lunch.
Nice.
And anytime you meet with the press, you got to kind of be a little on guard or a little careful and watch what you say. You've got to remember your media training. Like, don't, you know, leak your future plans for a VMware space station. I mean, we don't have a space. We do not have a space station. But no, I was like, you know what? Before we go to lunch, how about I do an interview with him? You know, let's turn the microphone around. You know, who's watching the watchers? So let's dig into what the opinions of, you know, the man behind the keyboard, and particularly the snarky keyboard when he was working at The Register.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. And so that is why this episode is entitled Simon Says, because we're going to hear what Simon Sherwood says. So take a listen.
All right. So Simon Sherwood, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So most people may know you, you know, for writing for The Register, but it looks like you've had a long, you know, storied history across tech journalism here.
Well, yeah. Back in about 1995, the folks who ran PC Week Australia were foolish enough to hire me for my first gig, my first professional gig. I've been writing about tech since I was about 15, which is about 35 years now. I suppose the first stuff I wrote was for the newsletter of the Australian ZX Users Association, which I still think of as the first Azure.
So I need to interrupt you and clarify for our American listeners that Z is known as the letter Z.
Yes.
Back in the home. It gets endlessly confusing when you first figure it out, but then you just kind of roll with it.
Yeah, sorry. And ZX or ZX in this context stands for the Sinclair ZX Spectrum, aka the Timex Sinclair 1000, I think, which was the kind of first of the great weird Z80 British microcomputers, which I acquired in my teens. And there was quite a vigorous little user group down here with about 200 or 300 members and a good newsletter. And yeah, I first started writing for them and got the bug, and I suppose I've scarcely stopped writing about technology ever since.
So let's talk about cryptocurrency, what you're really passionate about. So
but
on that note, it is interesting what you know, with Situation Publishing and the Register specifically, what is it that draws y'all to certain stories, or draws you, you know, towards them or away from them, so to speak? What do you find interesting versus not in what you cover?
That's a very good question. I'm glad you asked it. It's weird because I do it every day without thinking. Look, there's a bunch of stuff which we know our audience is just going to be interested in. Linus Torvalds swears at people. Linus Torvalds reveals he doesn't put on pants most days of the week. You know, that kind of gossip. People are just going to click on it. People are going to read it. It's a part of being in this industry. Somebody lends me a curved 49-inch monitor for a month. People are going to click on that because, you know, who doesn't want a 49-inch curved monitor?
I got one of the 36-inch. I got a pair of the 36s from Dell. And I was like, these things are amazing. Yeah, like, how did I live like a peasant with a 20-inch monitor for so long?
Precisely. It's like, you know, being totally wrapped in stuff. You know, there's community stuff like that. And then we look at, you know, and I don't think I'm just blowing smoke here. Then we look at vendors that really matter to the Register's audience / community of hands-on IT pros. And, you know, who's in every data center? Well, Microsoft, VMware. Probably Oracle, and in terms of kit, you know, Dell EMC, HPE, Lenovo. So what we try and do is figure out what those guys are doing, and if possible, figure it out ahead of time, so we can bring you all some stuff that you go, oh, I wish I'd known that earlier, and I learned about it at the Register. And then every time somebody clicks on a Register story, my children get a bowl of rice. And every time somebody clicks on an ad on the Register, my children get a shoe. And so the joke I make is, please click on more ads because we've got so many left shoes at home.
No, I hear you there. And full disclosure, I did some freelancing, wrote a couple articles for El Reg back in the day. And they actually do pay real money, which is, I suspect, why y'all have quality journalism versus the let's copy paste and change a few things on a press release that is unfortunately some other sites.
Sometimes you got to do that. Sometimes, you know, very seldom, the press release does tell the story. But the other thing about the Reg, I suppose, is a lot of us are old. And so we've been there, we've done that, we've got 5,000 conference t-shirts, and having been around for a while means that we can offer some perspective on things. We've been tracking vendors and tracking stories for a long time, and that matters, I think.
So let's talk a little bit about that change over time. I know you worked with SNIA before, and so from the SNIA, which their mission, my understanding, was trying to make storage more accessible from make it more interoperable, some different initiatives and things like that, SMIS. You know, what did you view were some of the better successes, or what did you view, I guess, were some of the failures of trying to bring more standardization and education to the storage industry?
Look, doing it from down here in Australia is interesting because SNIA Australia New Zealand, which asked me to be a non-executive board member, kind of had this remit to just promote networked storage.
Death to DAS. Everything should be connected. Yeah. So no.
And they won. it took 10 or 12 years and they resoundingly won, and then they wrapped themselves up because, you know, mission accomplished. Who wasn't buying NAS? Who wasn't buying SAN? The standards were kind of a bit less relevant down here. But overall, I mean, I feel like the SNIA, like a lot of standards groups, you know, certainly has its place and certainly comes up with useful stuff, but industry moves at different speed and has its own needs. And so there's a useful tension there.
I mean, how much of that running, I guess, independent of the standards do you view as just the velocity of they don't want to wait on a standard. They don't want to wait on consensus versus, I guess, some maybe taking a more cynical view. It's, you know, trying to differentiate through proprietary systems or means or do, you know, some of that.
I think there's this kind of harsh reality in the world that once you start selling something and it works, your customers stop caring about the standard. So, you know,
That was the secret to Cisco's success from 1998 through a good portion of the 2000s.
Yeah.
And the standards figured themselves out later for VLANs and power over Ethernet, but they got stuff out there and it worked and no one really, you know.
So the world's first commercial 5G network apparently launched this week in Qatar. And they claim that, you know, any month now you'll be able to, you know, have a handset that works on it, and there'll be stuff that works on it. Now, within that small Qatari community, they're not going to care about standards. They're just going to like the fact they've got a really fast phone.
Yeah. If I can do 10 gigs on my phone, do I care that the modem follows 802? I'm always watching that build out of my neighbor. They're putting in towers every two blocks, and I'm staring at one outside my window right now at home, and I'm like, you know, I don't care about the standard. Mm. I care about how do I get 10 gig from me to there and get away from the existing monopoly effectively I have on my last mile.
Yeah. And so, I'll tell you, actually, a friend of mine once had a really interesting job. She's a property lawyer. And it was her job in the early days of 3G to basically, you know, sit in front of a map and go, right, we need that place and that place and that place and that place and that place for masts, and then go out and negotiate leases with them, which was actually a really critical part of 3G and 4G rollout. So, you know, when you do get that fabulous speed, have a little thought for the property lawyer that found a good mast site and negotiated a good deal.
Well, and it's interesting how much of the networking world is real estate. Or it's construction, knowing how to get permits and how to dig. I think there was L3 Networks, which is a fairly large practice. It was two brothers who were in the construction industry and said, well, if 80% of the cost of fiber is digging, we're really good at that already. So we'll figure out the technology later.
Yeah.
And
different domain expertise can make a huge difference.
Yeah, I think Quest, they had right away. I mean, actually, you go back. Quest, their right of ways was all rail. It was a railroad baron.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wiltel, which was the predecessor of MCI WorldCom, that was a bunch of abandoned oil gas pipelines in Texas. So
it's asset recycling, we call it down here.
Asset recycling, I like that. So just curious on the storage side, the trends of, you know, cloud storage, object storage, you know, and hyperconverged infrastructure, those kind of two things. How do you see that as changing how IT professionals skill up or what they focus on or you know what their titles are, things like that?
Okay, well, I think the cloud storage was so obvious an idea. I mean, it's no coincidence that S3 was the first thing that AWS did.
Yeah, let's talk about a standard that wasn't a standard, but everyone used it, so we quit caring about building a standard.
Yeah, and back in, you know, whenever it was, 2007, 2008 more likely, I was meeting storage startups here in Australia back when I was doing searchstorage.com.au. Long may it rest in peace. And, you know, people instantly got it. The thing with cloud storage that is now most interesting to me is, you know, the archival use case, you know, tick, just do it. But if you have a look at the stuff that especially Azure is doing, Azure seems to me to be building the complete storage and data protection stack. And they're going to integrate enough of it into Windows Server that I think you're going to be able to do, so much of what you'd usually ask
a backup vendor
to do. Well,
I think Peter McKay this past week said that, you know, he was speaking outside of, I guess, the presence of Veeam, that the backup industry as a whole is actually shrinking in many cases.
Yeah.
People are finding other ways to protect that data and that life cycle, have the object system natively manage, copy data management, deal with that, as well as obviously – if you can get your applications to speak directly to object, you can automate that life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people have been snapping, you know, storage arrays and just chunking blocks there, but people obviously need more granularity. That's where the enterprise backup market is, but that's going to clearly change. And I have seen some of the backup vendors making some strategic acquisitions in that space to try to get ahead of it.
And this to me is actually the fascinating thing about the enterprise backup industry. It's the only industry I've ever seen in which incumbency seems not to have conferred a big advantage. You know, TSM, people just been chucking it out for years. You know, network, net backup. I mean, you know, IBM. Oh,
the three theories of backup, networker, net backup, and Commvault. They just had such an incumbency in so many environments. Now, they may require PhDs to operate, but, you know, it's – they were.
But, you know, Commvault was a bit of a disruptor itself, and now along comes Veeam.
Yeah, with Symphono. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me that that's an industry in which incumbency just didn't matter for much. In terms of how this changes what people need to do in the industry, I think from what I can see anyway, is that the basic concepts of what you do with data don't change. The tools that you use may change. A hyperconvergence comes along and just makes your data center a more comfortable and consistent place. I don't imagine that anybody who's looking to refresh servers or storage at the moment won't put hyperconverged on their shopping list. I can't imagine the case in which you won't, unless you've got, you know, some compelling reason to retain the architecture.
It's becoming the default choice, and then you work on the exclusionary. Okay, I've got this weird, I've got 14 petabytes of ice cold storage of cat photos. Oh, like, let's go look at some object for that or some type of deep archive. But no, it's the default for traditional your apps and your core app hot data.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And of course, you know, virtual storage, and again, not blowing smoke. I mean, it just makes sense in a lot of use cases. I think Dell put out a thing last week. It was like year two of Scale.io. And I think they said they've now sold it was 20-something thousand physical arrays and about 10 or 12,000 virtual arrays. It's only a few years since when VMware put out the first VMware storage appliance, the Silicon's toy.
The VSA.
Yeah, it's a toy. Nobody will ever buy this stuff for real workloads. Wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a crude tool, but you know, things have improved. But everything will have an option to abstract into software. I think we know that now.
Well, and even the traditional storage platforms, most of them are based on commodity Intel processors.
Yeah.
There's very few proprietary ASICs and FPGAs, and I keep hearing rumors that FPGAs are coming on die to the primary CPUs anyway, so those types of capabilities that you would have used those for anyways.
Maybe entirely possible.
NVDIMMs, you know, which were common, the other proprietary thing in Array, those are now becoming standard. So there's really nothing you shouldn't be able to do with COTS, although hardware does matter. You still need quality. You need support.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't just throw a big server at things and expect anything to behave. I don't need to tell the audience, the listeners of this podcast that. But the trend to abstraction will continue. But the principles of what you do with the data, they pretty much remain.
You need... You're still afraid of fire, flood, or blood in that data center. You need the copies off. You probably want some type of air gap or offline copy for critical data to protect against.
And you want to take it seriously and assume nothing and build anti-fragile systems.
That's an interesting one, particularly on the software side of software-defined storage. How much, looking with our own internal teams, how much HCL testing and how that group is constantly finding ways to try to break the lower levels and either one, build mitigations into the product, or two, work to improve the ecosystem.
And that's, you know, that's grinding. It's grinding, boring work. You don't want to see how the sausage gets made. But if people aren't doing it well, then you don't get this stuff. And, you know, I think all of us need to just occasionally pause to admire the people who are down, many layers deep in the stack, making little things work.
No, I had a conversation with Dave Edwards previously on this podcast, and I remember coming to one time and I'm like, hey, I'm seeing this weird situation with SD cards to where they're corrupting. And he's like, well, are you writing to him? I'm like, no, we don't write. It's not the situation. It's only reads. He goes, oh, you can burn out the cell from reading in a week. And he starts explaining to me, pulls up this, I think it was a SNIA conference presentation on read discards. And I'm like, oh God, I'm glad there's some smart people who are thinking about these problems and how to mitigate them.
And when you think about how that chain, you know, goes all the way up to people in universities and research institutes who invent this stuff to begin with, and then so many smart people come together so that you can take a cat photo and put it in the cloud.
Well, and I mean, if we're going to push storage forward, you always see these news articles about, you know, coming in 5 years, which really means coming never, you know, it's 3D cube storage or these
super colossal magneto-resistant.
Yeah, we're still waiting on silicon photonics, you know, all these other things, which I know this stuff is coming, but it takes a lot of hard engineering work to get that stuff out of the lab.
But, you know, I was talking to an engineer the other day at a storage vendor beginning with P, which shall remain nameless. He said to me, I kind of can't believe how much stuff I get in a rack these days and all the things I can do with it. And he's right.
There are some Fortune 5000s out there that you could run all of their compute probably in a rack if you go crazy with the densest compute blades or the petabyte in a – the new Intel Ruler form factor getting a petabyte. Mm-hmm. I go back to Jurassic Park, you know, the greatest IT movie of all time, because it's about if you don't pay your IT guys, they will try to murder you with dinosaurs.
Yep.
But that lunch speech, you know, yes, mm-hmm. you could, but you never stop to think if you should. Yeah. You know, it's.
But, you know, I mean, silicon photonics will come, you know, will come and, you know, SSDs will hit 30 terabytes.
And we'll have to come up with app developers will have to invent new ways to waste capacity and compute. Yeah, they're ingenious at finding new ways to waste cycles.
And
once it becomes cheap enough.
So. Yep. I mean, 10 years ago when I started writing about storage, you know, you needed a Symmetrics to do big things. And Symmetrics was expensive and complicated. Storage is no longer a problem for anybody. You know, it still requires care and feeding and it still has a cost, but the cost has gone through the floor. And you know, it's not a bottleneck. It's not the thing that stops you from doing anything. And then, you know, processors have become so fast and so much else has changed on the motherboard inside the server. The next generation of that will be faster and faster. And, I mean, there will be so much that we can do before long. And it's going to be exciting, I think, to be a part of building that infrastructure and watching what people do with it.
Well,
without, you know, going all, I love everything. I'm shiny, happy, optimistic, because part of working for the Register is being, hang on, where can this go wrong?
That was actually the hardest thing of writing a couple articles for you guys, was getting the snark right, you know, that certain, you know, excited but balanced with pessimism and snark, so cautiously balanced.
I think that what we've seen, you know, just over the last few months is it's great. We can now build hyperscale world-girdling applications. And if you don't think about how those applications will be used, then they will be misused.
We need to make sure we're not building dinosaur parks, but, you know, saving lives, I guess, or doing something real with this technology.
Yeah, and I was just listening to a podcast this morning about how rumors traveling over social networks are leading to actual riots and actual murders across the world, and how a certain social network that starts with F and ends with K simply didn't have enough moderators who spoke one language to understand what was going on its platform. And the result of that is death.
Well, it's always humbling to have conversations with customers and the people who are using your platforms and realizing the impacts. I mean, this week I was talking with one customer and one partner, and they were discussing how, you know, a certain double-digit percent of the GDP of one country was effectively flowing through, you know, our systems. And, you know, obviously everything was working. We were thankfully not in the Register, you know, you know, discussing an outage there. But it's humbling to see that, or talk to hospitals and see that, you know, these systems run on your code. And it better work.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always nice to cover an outage and everybody tut tut. So a lot of the time the outages are just one of those low-level things that, you know.
I saw your coverage of the some issues with the tax website. But, you know, we had that in the States, by the way. Actually, I went to go pay my taxes on tax day, mm-hmm. you know, waiting till the last mm-hmm. minute, like the, you know, well-planned and organized person I am. And lo and behold, it did not work. And I was like.
Well, this one here wasn't on tax day. This was just a kind of random day in December when things fell over. But the second incident, it seems to have been somebody literally trying to drag a SAN across a data center floor, and people then going, "Those cables, I don't think they work anymore." That was a bit silly. But
it's a reminder that no matter how invisible we try to make infrastructure, it still is very real. It's still very physical, and mm-hmm. it requires, I mean, I've often described the Wintel era after the mainframe era as kind of this wandering in the wilderness, to where we went from highly structured processes, because hardware was often considered much more brittle, mm-hmm. towards hardware became more reliable. And we moved to a more, you know, from being a very structured tribal area, the mainframe area, to any small child like myself could just say, I want to be an IT person, and walk into a data center and yell YOLO and start, you know, holding down the power button to fix things or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it's interesting seeing the processes and the core stuff. I mean, not maybe going full ITIL, you know, overboard, but if you want to run a reliable and consistent computing environment, it's very much about the people and the processes, not just buying shiny toys.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, Windows NT and Dell and Compaq have a lot to answer for, because they made it pretty easy to build some pretty good applications, and you know, things got funky after that.
Well, as I say, it's there's a lot more order coming into the chaos right now, so hopefully it'll stay there. Well, let's go grab some lunch here. So thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, that's okay. It's off for a kangaroo burger, mate.
Yeah, so that's Simon Sherwood. So he's now somewhere else, right? He's no longer with the Register, right, John?
Yeah, he's he's over at the Next Platform, which is focused on a lot of hyperscaler, as I say, build out systems. With Next Media, he's the editorial director over there, which is actually a cool thing because they're definitely still talking storage and virtualization in this, but more from a HPC hyperscale perspective.
Yeah, very cool.
It was really interesting hearing his perspective of kind of the earlier days of SNIA, which is an organization I've always been kind of aware of as this kind of chugging along at the back end in a lot of cases on some projects like Swordfish or, you know, SMIS, some other kind of trying to bring some coherency, I guess, to the management of storage. But it was interesting seeing kind of their push for, they were, you know, an organization pushing for the adoption of central storage and also, you know, specifically in Australia, which was a very early adopter of virtualization and which always brought people into buying central storage. Seeing how there were groups of people just focused on that adoption.
Yeah, absolutely. I also enjoyed that whole conversation around sort of the evolution of storage as it moves towards HCIs. It seemed to be a good conversation, and I really appreciated your little comment about you know, it's always nice not to be in the register referenced for like a big outage or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's something. It's definitely a publication to where it's like, you know what? If there's an outage, it's like, okay, I really don't want this in the register. I don't want my name in the register. Yeah. You know, It's, you know, back in the day, I remember a CIO saying, guys, we got to have this fixed by the morning or else we're going to put our names in the papers. You know, now I think for any large global, it's we don't want our names in the register on this one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, John. So there are a couple of other things going on. Obviously, man, I looked on the calendar just before we started this episode. 24 days to VMworld Europe. Can you believe that?
My bags are already packed for Barcelona. I'm ready, Pete. I've got.
Yeah, I already reserved it. I already reserved a table at a couple of my favorite restaurants. We're all set.
I'm chugging. By the way, pro tip for anyone going to Barcelona: start drinking water now. The sheer amount of jamón and salted olives. Yeah. By like day three, you're like, I need I just need a gallon of water perpetually brought to me.
Oh, you're so right, man. And you get there and it's like, oh, wow, these tapas are delicious and all this food is so good. It's so rich. And then by like day four, you're like, oh, I just want some salad, some lettuce.
Can I have something that's not fancy cheese and you know, air cured jamón?
Yeah, but, absolutely.
I'll definitely be making my pilgrimage to one of the towers on Sagrada Familia. For everyone also going, pro tip, remember to book your tickets in advance. You can generally not get them same day. They're cheap. It's a best view of the city, though, without a doubt. I think Pete went with me last time.
Yep. Yeah, it's beautiful. That's the way to do it. So other thing, we're not going there just to do some touring. I think we have a few sessions, don't we?
Yes, we have sessions, Pete. What's new in vSAN? Technical deep dive. HCI 1768 BE.
What's BE for?
What's BE stand for?
BE. Let's see. Does that sound for... No. Sorry. Let's see. Beautiful España. No. Bring edibles? No, I hope not. Borrachos eating? No, I don't know.
Best ever, Pete. Best ever.
I like it. Best ever. That makes sense.
Session. Totally not Bush League.
You're Bush League.
Yes.
I was going to say, if you're not on that session, yep, as Vaughn says, you're Bush League.
Absolutely.
So the other session I've got is Better Storage Utilization with Space Reclamation and Unmap. HCI 3331 BE. This is going to be a great session. We're going to talk about how to get your petabytes back, Europe. How to get your petabytes back.
That's also a BE session. How do you have two best ever sessions? There's only one best ever session, John.
You know, I'm making it plural. So it's awesome. we're vosotros. Is that vosotros? My Spanish skills are bad. So
sí, vosotros. Also, I have a session on virtual volumes, doing a virtual volumes deep dive. I don't remember the number of the session, so you'll have to research that one on your own. But one thing you'll notice is there are two deep dive sessions. They sound almost exactly the same. I recommend both, by the way. One of them is virtual volumes technical deep dive. I'm doing that one, and then there's also another one that's virtual volumes technical deep dive by Pure. And so Cody Hosterman's doing that one. That's also going to be a very good session. So at one point they had them scheduled. You believe this? VMworld scheduled these sessions at the exact same time. So we were like the battle of
rap battle.
Yeah. So I did not want to go toe to toe with Cody because I actually want to be in that session. So we begged, we pleaded, and they split us up. So now you can, you know, now you can schedule both of them because I'm on Tuesday and Cody's on Wednesday. So no rap battle, John.
Good times.
Let's see. One other thing I wanted to mention, and you mentioned this on the end of the V Forum online that you did last week, and that is the fact that we've got a few betas coming up. There are three, actually, for vSAN. One of them is called vSAN Data Protection. The other one is vSAN File Services. And the last one is Cloud Native Storage. We get a lot of questions around what's the future of vSAN, and what better way to find out the future than actually kick the tires on this beta. And you can get more information at www.vmware.com/go/vsan-beta. Yeah, so jump on that.
And on that beta, I would say more, but those are the only words legal has allowed me to say.
That's it. Go to this URL. That's all we can say, right?
Well, actually, I think we have to say vaguely, like, point in that direction. That may be too strong, Pete. So
fair enough. Fair enough. Cool. All right. So, John, what else do we have before we take off this week?
One reminder is that we will be podcasting at VMworld Barcelona, and there will be podcast stickers. So come find us.
Oh, absolutely. Great, great point, John. So yeah, we will be in Barcelona in the Solutions Exchange. We're going to be scheduling interviews. So if you are listening to this and you want to come chat with us, hit us up on Twitter at VertSpeaking. We would love to get you on our schedule. Also, we're giving away t-shirts. We're giving away stickers. And to one lucky winner, we're going to also be giving away a pair of very sexy Beats by Dre headphones with the Virtually Speaking podcast logo inscribed right on the headphones. Those are pretty sexy.
And after that, I say it's time to end this so I can go work on my log into work a day and put in my MBOs for the next half.
That's a good idea, John. I like your thinking, my friend. All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this in all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Simon Sherwood for chatting with us and John for finally coming back from Asia. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.